You're listening to Dr. Doris Day on Doctor Radio, Sirius 114 and XM 119.
Welcome back to Doctor Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Doris Day, and this is the Dermatology Show. We're at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-698-3627. I will bring in our next guest now, Dr. Amy Derrick, and we'll continue taking your calls. Dr. Amy Derrick is a board-certified dermatologist practicing both medical and cosmetic dermatology, and she's the founder and director of Derrick Dermatology. Hi, Amy. How are you?
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Great. Thanks. Thanks for being on the show. And I know you have little ones, so you can kind of empathize a little bit with what our callers are going through in terms of all the things that we go through while we're pregnant and how we try to not do things that we don't have to do until the kids are born.
The sacrifice begins during pregnancy.
Yes. So Amy, we're going to talk a lot about, we're going to change the subject a little bit. We'll talk about some different skin treatments, and I want to talk first about what you think is new and interesting on the horizon in terms of skincare, skin treatments, and procedures.
Doris, there's a new procedure that involves cryolipolysis, which is a non-invasive fat reduction device. It's really interesting in that it's basically applied externally, and there's no needles or any sort of liposuction cannula. And externally, the coolness of this machine freezes the fat cells, which causes them to break up and ultimately be excreted through the body, and you can reduce fat in this non-invasive way. This was FDA-approved this year, and I've been doing it in my practice for the last couple of months, and we've had a very, very positive response so far from the patients who've been treated.
What is it called?
It's called Zeltiq, and the actual procedure is called cryolipolysis, which is cool sculpting. The branded name is essentially cool sculpting, but what it does is it reduces small amounts of fat. So if you're a thin person who works out, or someone, for example, who's going through menopause and may have like a little bit of stubborn belly fat or fat where your bra meets your back, that area, that dreaded back fat area, it really does selectively target small areas for reduction.
Okay. You know, I'm not that familiar with Zeltiq. I've heard a little bit about it, and we were starting to talk about it with Mark Nestor in the first hour, and then we had our conversation went in such great directions, and we didn't actually discuss this in great detail in particular. However, I'll compare it to what I know more about, which is a liposonic device, and my concern with it was that that with the liposonic device, it uses ultrasound, so it's slightly different to then create heat, but it heats whatever is behind it. So it's not that specific in what it's heating. So if right now the way that the device is set up, from my understanding of it, is that if you are at an organ or muscle or anything, you're heating up whatever is at the end of that heat cone. And so the people who might be the ideal candidates, the people who need that pocket reduction of fat, would not have enough fat around the area where you wanted to treat in order to get a proper reduction in a safe way that would be reliable as of yet. Now, there is a lot of data. They're finessing it, and I think that this device has great potential and will have a place in our treatment as one of our treatment tools. But with Zeltiq, how do you target the fat safely and really get a reliable, reproducible, lasting reduction?
The fat is frozen, and for some reason, fat does not tolerate cold as much as normal skin structures do. And because of that intolerability to cold, the fat basically breaks down, and it's been shown based on histology that there is this actual cell layer is broken up and ultimately removed in some process, which is not completely clear. And that process basically allows for about an average of 20% reduction. Now, ultrasonic energy is energy and heat delivered to the body, which has a wavelength that can be a variable depth, whereas with the cooling of the skin, it basically targets the area just underneath the dermis and doesn't have that deep penetrating ability.
So you feel comfortable. And how many treatments are required?
So basically, you get after the first treatment, you'll get an average of 20% reduction in an area that's being treated. Now, the area, for example, if you have a little bit of fat that rolls over your pants, that may be a two-treatment area, and then a love handle might be another treatment area. So you basically whittle away at the areas you don't like. I don't think there's a study to show if you've done two in a row, do you get 20 plus 20, or is it 20% and then another 20%? Is it going to be 40%? That I don't know. But what I do know is that my mother, who is a big fan of yours, by the way, in this show,
so sweet.
Was a guinea pig of mine several months ago, and she didn't believe at first that it was working, and this actually takes a couple of months to kick in.
Uh-huh.
But now she's in her size 4 petite pants, and which actually are a little bit loose on her. So the results take a little bit of time to see.
Do you have your patients follow a certain diet or a certain regimen in that time, or are you just sort of, because sometimes I think when it can be difficult to measure, and I think that's one of the problems Liposonics is having with the FDA is sort of coming up with a scale to show true reduction in a reliable, reproducible way, because there are natural fluctuations. We're talking about this time of year being the holidays with Thanksgiving and Christmas and all the stuff that we eat that we normally don't eat or shouldn't eat. And so there can be natural fluctuations in terms of water and fat from one day to the next.
Because the removal of the fat is gradual, it doesn't create a huge increase in the lipids in the blood at one time, but it does increase the lipids in the blood over the short term. And so I often, advise the patients to watch their diet during that process of elimination, just so that we don't tax the body more than it needs to be. Another new thing that I have in my office is I have a three-dimensional body camera in which you can take before photos and after photos and actually gauge the volume reduction in the area that's being treated. I just got this camera a couple of weeks ago, so those people it's called Canfield Vectra 3D.
Uh-huh.
It's an unbelievably cool device in that you can do a lot of assessments, but it's got a body function which can be used for, plastic surgeons to simulate breast augmentation or liposuction, or in my case, to do a documentation of tattoo removal or this device, which is the fat removal device. So, we try to, of course, have standardized results and reproducible and results as scientists, but I think that I was excited about this device because the side effect profile seemed very favorable. There's no downtime. The patients don't have to wear special garments like you do with liposuction. There's a little bit of soreness and numbness that persists for about a week or two after the procedure, but you can go back to work. And during the procedure, we're actually installing a cable TV device or TV on the wall so people can watch TV, because basically they're just emailing and hanging out while their fat is being frozen.
Oh, that's very cool. And that is interesting. And we were talking also about stem cells and fat and how fat does sort of respond differently to it has its own set of parameters, and we're learning so much more about it. And hopefully eventually we'll learn more about fat and cellulite, which is another topic for another day. I keep promising I'll do a whole show on cellulite, and I keep putting it off because I can't find anything exciting to say about it to cover in a show. So I keep waiting to see something really great. And I think part of it is that we really just don't understand cellulite, but we are understanding fat a lot better. And we're learning that when you melt or when you harvest fat, when you remove fat in any way, there's a lot of elements within it that are highly valuable that we can then reuse, and also that fat, in terms of modulating it, melting it, forming it, getting rid of it in controlled ways, can be very effective with treatments that we wouldn't otherwise consider, like freezing, like ultrasound, that may not have the same effect on other organ systems or on muscles or other parts of the body. So do you use this on areas like around the eyes for fat bags?
It requires the application of a handpiece that has a suction on it, and so the actual handpiece is huge. And so it would not be, it's as big as like two hands next to each other.
Oh, I see.
So it's not geared towards the face at this time, although I think they're working on a neck handpiece for that stubborn turkey waddle fat pocket under the chin, which would be very
very that's
exciting.
A big area. That would be huge. Then I think I would probably look into really getting the device. Let's take a call. Let's take a call first, a little bit more general, and then we have a few calls waiting here. So let's go to Derek in Pennsylvania first. Hi, Derek.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So you were kind of at the tail end of my other calls. I wanted to make sure I got to you also.
I appreciate your call. This is probably the second time I've called your show.
Oh, good.
A lot of good information. I'll give you a brief synopsis of my situation here. I'm about 8 years into a skin problem that develops for me, usually when the winter months start to trickle in. You know, it started out originally probably December, and every year it seemed to that this situation came up where the skin would get dry on my legs and in my groin area along my waistline, mostly November, and then it's, over the last couple of years, it's gotten all the way back to starting in August. I've seen a dermatologist about 6 times over the past 4 years, tried all kinds of lotions and everything that your last two callers have talked about, clobetasol to Elidil. And it wasn't until my last visit that we discussed possibilities of an airborne allergy. And I started taking Claritin D for a couple of weeks, and it was gone.
That's
completely,
awesome.
Completely gone. However, I want to say that was probably back in September and October, and over the last week, it has come back and got me. Now, I've been taking a generic version of Claritin. I can't pronounce it exactly, but it's loratadine or something like
Loratadine.
That.
Loratadine, uh-huh.
Right. That seems to have done, with a very minimal amount of side effects, has done the job up until the last week or two.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's gotten drastically cold, and I know with the heat blasting in the car when you're in the vehicle that that can have some effect, and because it's attacked my right lower leg below my shin the majority of the time here, I'm kind of attributing it to maybe the dry heat coming out of the automobile, and I was wondering if you have any ideas for me as far as where I've gone and what to do from here.
Have you ever had patch testing or allergy testing?
I did have patch testing done, and the only thing they found was related to formaldehyde-based clothing dyes.
Uh-huh.
But since the Claritin took care of it over the last, I want to say, 6 months, maybe 3 months, I pretty much have ruled that out myself. I've changed everything from laundry detergents to soaps to toothpaste, shampoo, everything. Basically,
but that wouldn't
everything.
Be, right. But the thing is, the seasonality of it makes me think it's not something that you have every day all year round. It's something that would be seasonal in terms of plants or, you know, holiday plants or things that you might bring into the house that would be more this time of year than all year round. So all those things, if you were reacting, you would probably react all the time. Amy, any guidance for him?
So, Derek, you, as well as many people during the winter, suffer from dry skin. And are you taking any medicines in terms of cholesterol medicines?
No. The only thing I take on a daily basis, besides what I've just described with you, would be a normal 5 or 6 different vitamins. A multivitamin, I take a vitamin C, I take a butcher's broom for poor circulation in the extremities, which I've had great results with that. I've even gone to the point where, or to the extreme where I've stopped every different aspect of my diet. I would stop taking my vitamins for a couple months to see if that would affect it any in different ways.
Have you gotten a humidifier for your apartment, for your bedroom?
I have not.
I think that might help. I think, you know, if you think you spend 7 to 9 hours in that room in a day, adding a humidifier to the bedroom might be helpful. And then it really, I think I would agree with Amy that this might be a case of the loratadine might help, or the Claritin, because it's calming down the itch component. When you scratch, there can be some histamine release. And even though that's not necessarily a true allergy, taking an antihistamine can be very helpful. But it will be about smart hydration and using a moisturizer. That Cetaphil Restoraderm is a product you might want to look at. It's designed for eczematous type of skin. It helps with barrier repair. And and then just as soon as you get out of the bath or shower, using a really rich moisturizer like that, the Cetaphil or Eucerin or CeraVe, or even Aquaphor, and then sort of putting a plastic wrap on it, not to block your circulation, but to just help that product sink in, and then a cotton sock, a white cotton sock on top, and just really lock the moisture in the skin.
Okay. I do Cetaphil every day for
cream,
the last
not lotion,
few years.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, not the lotion, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct. Mm-hmm. For the last few years, when I have a flare-up, I'll do a treatment with something that, you know, I have a list of, right now I have four different lotions that I'm supposed to use in severity, depending on the type of outbreak I have, and then cover it with the Cetaphil. And then I can usually make it through the day, but like right now I'm at the end of my work day,
yeah.
Just pulled into the driveway, and I can feel it starting to flare up that I'm, you know, the time that I feel the best is as soon as I get out of the shower and I'm able to put some of that stuff on there, and then for the next few hours I'm okay. But when it comes and gets you, it's
pretty
it's
bad.
Unbearable.
I think the circulation problems might be part of your problem as well, that you mentioned you have poor circulation, even things like leg elevation. But I think that circulatory problem over the course of the day might be part of the issue as well in terms of healing, especially when you say the rash is the worst on that lower leg below the knee. That's typically where we would see that too, with dry skin, circulatory issues, and it can be very difficult to control. I think sometimes you just need more of the antihistamines so that you can sleep, add the humidifier to the bedroom, and keep going with your moisturizers. But it sounds like
okay.
You're doing everything right. You just have to do kind of more of it. And Amy,
okay.
Anything else to add? Would you?
I think that the differential diagnosis for rashes on the lower leg, of course, include tinea or athlete's foot. Sometimes if you have scaliness, it can extend past the foot onto the leg. And then when you put your underwear on, you can drag that fungus up into your groin. I know you mentioned you had it in your groin as well. So you'd want to make sure, of course, and it wouldn't be seasonable and may not be applicable to you, that you don't have that type of
problem.
It's
a great point. Such a great point.
The other thing that I like to do with patients of mine is talk to them about their daily skincare routine. And I know you're probably on top of this, but for just in general, there's a soap, which is basically like ivory soap, and then there's synthetic detergents, which is like Cetaphil, or most of the commercially available beauty bars are synthetic detergents. It's important that you use a body wash with a puff. The air that's introduced into the body wash allows it to lather, and that's how it works. And so if you use a body wash with your hand, it leaves a film on your skin, which can be irritating. During
okay.
the winter time, the hot showers, which are very delightful, as you know, dry out the skin. But immediately upon exiting the shower, it's important to put on the moisturizer within 3 minutes, because at that time is when you lock the moisture close to your skin. And, for example, if you use Vaseline with your skin not being wet, it doesn't work well, because the Vaseline blocks the escape of water from the skin. So you want to make sure your skin is hydrated before you moisturize it.
Okay.
Okay. So good luck with that. And give us a call back and let us know how you're doing. Keep us posted, okay?
Thank you very much.
All right, Derek. Have a good night. We're at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-698-3627. I'm Dr. Doris Day, and I'm talking with Dr. Amy Derrick about procedures for the skin that are new and exciting in terms of skin tightening, fat reduction, and rejuvenation. We can go to John in Canada. Hi, John.
Oh, hi. Good evening. I don't know if you can help me out or not. I'll make it brief.
We'll try.
I had some bags under my eyes and some volume loss in my cheeks in my mid-40s, and the doctor injected some Perlane underneath the eye bags to kind of lift that up to kind of make it the same. And that was a couple months ago, and basically what I noticed that it all created was like additional bags under the bags, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like it kind of lifted it, but it just created these two sacks.
Yep.
And I mean, it kind of lifted a bit, but what my real concern is that recently I've noticed if I lie on one side at night, if I wake up in the morning, it seems like one of the sacs kind of, like where the Perlane was, it kind of like drains out and it looks odd, and I have to like basically push my cheek, like almost like push the fluid back in.
Okay.
And then now it seems like in the last week, it seems like the one is really changed to the other. Like it almost seems like it's really drained out, like it's changed in shape.
Okay. Do you have allergies, John?
No.
Okay. All right, Amy, what do we say to this?
So did you have Botox and the crow's feet at the same time as the Perlane procedure?
I did, actually, yeah.
Sometimes if you have botulinum toxin or Dysport injections, Botox or Dysport injections in the crow's feet, what it does is it relaxes the muscles that act as a girdle in that area, holding fluid in. And so sometimes it's a problem if you do them at the same time, because the relaxation of those muscles and the addition of a pretty thick filler, Perlane's pretty thick, can basically cause extreme water absorption in that area, and the muscles that support it are weakened. So the good news for you is that that you can get rid of the Perlane by injecting hyaluronidase, or you of course would not do that, but a dermatologist who was well trained in that could help you out. And that's one of the nice things about these types of fillers, is that if there's a problem with Perlane, Restylane, Juvederm, for example, you can basically get rid of it. And so I certainly wouldn't wait till it goes away, because sometimes in that area, because the face doesn't move very much, it can stay for longer than a year. And so are you near Toronto at all?
Yes.
There's a fabulous doctor in Toronto named Dr. Vince Bertucci, who's a, Doris, you know him as
well.
Yeah,
he is fabulous.
He's fabulous, and I would go to him in Toronto to have him evaluate you.
Okay. Would it also help? I know you're talking about reversing, but at this point, would it also help to inject more Perlane in that area to help boost it up again, or would that not be something to do?
I never use Perlane under the eyes because I think it's a little bit thick.
I agree. I would use Restylane.
Restylane's the...
Well, I think they wanted more of a volume effect to build it up, like in the cheek area.
Then I would do it over more visits.
Oh.
And then for the cheek area, you can use Perlane, but directly under the eyes, I agree with Amy that I would switch. I would keep Restylane there, and then Perlane for other areas of the face. But and I think it's very true about the Botox. And the good thing is the Botox effect will wear off, and the next time maybe you won't either don't do them at the same time or don't treat the crow's feet area with Botox. But that can be a very transient kind of an effect, but still too long if you don't like it.
John, what I think you should do is wait 3 months till the Botox wears off. Have someone inject the Perlane so it gets dissolved. Watch your diet for salt. That area, it's like a sponge. And so if your volume is your blood volume is high, it's going to absorb more water there. And so you just want to watch out for dietary salt, and it will pass. You'll make it through this.
Okay. Very good. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Good luck.
Thanks for the call. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll take some more of your calls and talk more about rejuvenating and tightening techniques and devices. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Dr. Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Doris Day, and this is The Dermatology Show. I have my guest is Dr. Amy Derrick, who is a board-certified dermatologist practicing both medical and cosmetic dermatology. She is the founder and director of Derrick Dermatology in Barrington, Illinois. Is that correct, Amy? Barrington, Illinois?
Yes, real close to O'Hare, outside Chicago.
Oh, good. And, you had some issues with the airport, I know, with the weather. Lots of flight delays.
It's been very cold.
Yeah, here too.
Slippery.
I can't say I like it. And what's your website, Amy, just so people can find you?
It's at www.derrickdermatology.com, and my last name is spelled with one R.
DERICK.com.
Right.
Perfect. DerrickDermatology.com. Thank you. Just want to make sure, and we'll repeat it again before the end of the show. And we will take some more calls, but I'll give out a number first. We're at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-698-3627. One thing I've noticed, Amy, is that I look at the devices that I've had in the just about 15 years of practice. I have about 12 devices for all sorts of things, and I still use the first one that I had, so I'm happy to say that things don't just become obsolete, that there are really great devices out there, and we have new ways of using them over time. But one thing I've noticed, and I want to get your take on this for our listeners as well, is that what I'm finding more and more is that I'm combining different treatments and getting the best results. So, we had the caller who had the issue with the Perlane and the Botox, having an issue with that. But the thing is that when you do combine treatments such as volumizers and fillers with skin tightening treatments and resurfacing treatments, you can really get such a great result without surgery and oftentimes with minimal downtime.
I think that I think you're completely right, Doris. I mean, you of course want to go to someone who's fluent in the language of all the different procedures so that you can optimize your treatment protocol. We do, on my patients, have skincare advice, resurfacing, lasers, fillers. We do it all. And I think patients get a very natural, fresh look And they're looking for results that are makes them, you know, look like themselves, but just a little bit better. And I think that we, as dermatologists, really fit well into this space. At my practice, I'm fortunate enough to have a lot of the different lasers that address many different issues. So if a patient comes to my practice, for example, I'm able to treat them with almost all of the newest and best technologies that we can offer our patients at this time. And that's the way that we get the best results, is combining things and knowing when not to combine things, knowing when you should not do a big procedure and then do something else at the same time. We can slowly formulate a plan so that you can, you know, roll out your procedures in a way that makes the most sense.
I agree, and I also agree that skincare is really important. I think that one of the discussions that I always end up having as one of the first lines of treatment in terms of the treatment planning is helping patients understand how important it is to be using the right products on the skin and the right ingredients. And I'm amazed at two things. One is how far the industry has come in terms of research and development and coming out with formulations that are very effective at not just a high-end level, and I certainly have products in my office that I think are fabulous, but also at the drugstore level, so that everyone has access to really great skincare products at all different price points, and to be able to point them in that direction has been really helpful as a starting point for whatever other treatment that I do, or even as an endpoint to help maintain the results.
I think one of the most common combinations is somebody with too sensitive of skin to tolerate anti-aging protocols. And so with the advice of a person who's trained in dermatology, you really can get a cleansing and moisturizing routine that will allow you ultimately to be able to tolerate the vitamin A creams, which have unbelievable results from retinol over the counter all the way up to prescription tretinoin and even some off-label uses of Tazorac, for example. These molecules really do not only stimulate collagen, but decrease the degradation of collagen, and we have the ability to make our skin look more youthful by using creams.
Right, and of course, the never-ending, admonition of us for our patients to watch their sun exposure and to never forget to use sunscreen every day all year round, because so much of it is about prevention. Not just trying to treat what happens after the fact, although we can do that to a large extent, but really to prevent the problem as much as possible at any age, no matter how much sun damage there is. There's so much you can do in terms of proper skincare and preventing further damage.
Well, women have had a little bit of an advantage in this category because of the addition of sunscreen to makeup. A lot of women rely on that for their daily sunscreen, and men don't have that luxury for the most part.
Yeah, that's true.
And so it's important as we develop different vehicles for men, especially so they can tolerate a product being on their skin that doesn't make them look greasy or white. And I think that's been achieved, as you've mentioned, by these cosmetics companies who have spent billions of dollars in order to improve the lotions we put on our skin.
And then we just have to get men into the habit of it, although I think that more and more men are realizing that it does make a difference and they're sort of taking the time out to do that.
Men also, you know, I mean, of course, most men have short hair, and so they really have a lot of exposed skin running around all day.
Yeah.
You know, we have the luxury of being able to cover at least part of our neck and ears for people who do have longer hair. And so it's important that men, you know, just get in the habit of doing it.
Yep. Are you ready for a call?
Yes.
We can go to Susan in Corpus Christi, Texas. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
How are you?
Okay. Thank you. The question I have is, I had liposuction in May of this year,
mm-hmm.
Liposuction of the leg area, and had fat injected in under my eyes. I had fairly deep circles under my eyes and some fat injected in the cheek area as well. And I'm fairly satisfied with what with the under eye area. But I seem to have, because they were such deep circles, I seem to have lots of very fine wrinkles or lines under the eyes. That,
okay.
I would need more filler, some form of filler, or a skin treatment.
Okay, Amy, well, how would you address that? I'll let you start with this.
Well, I think we'd have to establish whether those wrinkles were there before the fat transfer occurred or not. There's a tendency for patients to not look at certain areas. Once an area is fixed, the other area kind of becomes more obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So when you fix, for example, the frown lines between the eyes, then all of a sudden you notice your lips are not as full. Was that something you noticed, or did you have photographs taken of you beforehand which showed the wrinkles were there or not there?
Well, they probably were, but because it was such a deep area, when that skin is brought to the surface, wouldn't it stand to reason that it would have nowhere to go but form little lines?
I think typically if you add volume to the face, it kind of stretches it out a little bit and gives it less, it usually looks less wrinkly. But it's possible you had some sort of fold that was, you know, revealed from filling up the cheek, that eye area became more obvious. Now, the under eye area is a very tricky area to treat. For the first thing, if you use just an eye cream, the hydration of that area is very important. And so if the area becomes dehydrated, it can look pretty wrinkly.
Right. I moisturize several times a day.
That's good.
I really do.
The technology, and I don't know, Doris, how you feel about this, but for under eye, around the eye, you can use Botox. But under the eye, you can use Botox there as well, but it can change the eye shape a little bit. And so typically I'll do resurfacing, which is a laser procedure that ablates the collagen, and when it heals in, it's basically a little bit tighter. And I've had good results because the skin's very thin there, that the energy can be delivered in a way that causes contraction.
Yeah, I like resurfacing there, and also the E-Matrix that I was talking about earlier. I like that for that area. I find it does well and is gentle enough and gives some nice tightening and smoothening of the skin. And I think also using some of the newer products that have growth factors, the TNS products for the eye creams, can also help with some fine lines in that area as well. So I would probably start with a skincare regimen with an eye serum and an eye cream, and then give that a good 3 months, see if you see any improvement, and then look to a procedure like a resurfacing. I do use Botox around the eyes a lot as well, but as you heard with the other caller who had a little bit of pooling of fluid around the eyes, that probably had something to do with the Botox treatment and maybe in combination with the filler, I would be a little bit hesitant to do much Botox in that area for you when I have other treatments that I think might be more reliably effective and give a longer lasting result. So I would say start with the skincare regimen and then consider a resurfacing treatment with a laser, a laser or a fractional device, so a fractional RF like the E-Matrix or a fractional laser that might help you. But
I think it's also very important if you do something around the eye that you get someone who knows what they're doing.
Yes,
because if you don't put eye shields in or something out like that, it could cause eye damage. And so, if you're doing a round close to the eye, don't let someone just pull the skin out of the little cup and treat it. I mean, you really need intraocular shields for people who have very wrinkles that are very close to the eyelid margin.
Okay.
And maybe the same person who did the fat, if they have a laser and if you're comfortable, you can speak to them about it and see what they say, since they know what they injected and know what your eyes look like before as well.
Okay.
All right. Well,
yes.
Good luck.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks for your call. We're at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-698-3627. And this is Dr. Doris Day. I am speaking with Dr. Amy Derrick, who is a board-certified dermatologist in Barrington, Illinois, right near O'Hare, so in Chicago. And we can go to Joanna. We'll go to Joanna. We'll guess where she is. Joanna, where are you?
I'm in Canada.
In Canada. Hi, Joanna, in Canada. How are you?
Yes, very good, thank you.
Good,
my
help
question
you.
Yes, I've had acne since I was 15. I'm 39 right now, and I've been on Accutane several times over the years. I'd say I've probably been on 4 treatments altogether, and it seems like when I'm on Accutane, my face is quite clear for 2 years, until it's time to go back on Accutane. Now with this last treatment, I believe it was in 2007, 2008, with my last treatment, I find that my skin doesn't heal as well anymore because of acne. So that's my question. Do I go back on Accutane again? I've tried everything, you know, over past 20-some years, and Accutane is the only thing that helps, but it only helps for like about 2 years. And then it's, I'm back to square one again.
Right.
And now, as a result, I, you know, put on MAC cosmetics just to hide the acne scars and the redness. And it's just, it's frustrating now at 40 years old, and I'm still battling with acne.
Is it on the whole face or mostly on the lower face?
Actually, it's the whole face, the forehead, the cheeks, the chin.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, there was a study that just came out that showed that low-dose Accutane, it's really called oral isotretinoin because Accutane as a brand name is no longer available. It's really just the generics, and the generic name is oral isotretinoin, and there's a bunch of generic brands out there. But that taking a low dose of it over a period of time might also be effective. And while this is difficult to get because with Accutane, we'll just keep calling it that because that's how people know it, you do have to go through a registry and have blood tests done every month, so it's not that easy to get as a low dose. But I've used that quite frequently with good results for people who need it. But there are also other medications I use, like there's one called Aldactone, and it's an off-label use. And I find that a lot of my adult patients, adult women patients with acne, often have a hormonal hypersensitivity, not necessarily a hormonal imbalance, and they can do quite well with this medication. So you might want to ask your doctor if that one would be appropriate for you. And it does take about 3 months to kick in. And then there are other treatments. Tazorac topically, their Isolase is a device. It's a treatment that you have done in the office that does deep pore cleansing and helps knock out some of the bacteria. So there are sort of aggressive and very effective, and not aggressive in terms of being harmful to the skin, but aggressive in terms of being effective with minimal downtime types of procedures you can have. Amy, what guidance would you have for her?
In the United States, if you do low-dose Accutane, which is the first thing that I thought of, which is Doris's first comment too, you have to register, as she mentioned, and it requires you to have monthly visits and blood draws. Now, you live in Canada, and I don't know the rules about Accutane dispensing in Canada, but they may, I would assume, probably be a little bit more flexible, where you could go in every, you know, 6 months or so, or 3 or 6 months once you're stable to get your blood drawn and so forth. I don't know the exact rules in Canada, but that's one reason why here it becomes impractical to keep people on a low dose of Accutane for a long time. Is your skin
the same process here?
Is your skin oily?
Yeah, we would have to get that blood test once a month just to make sure that everything's fine.
Which is kind of an interesting topic in and of itself. The blood tests from Accutane are very, very infrequently abnormal. I mean, the lipids in the blood go up a little bit, but, you know, there's a little bit of a question whether or not the monthly, you know, tests for Accutane are even needed. It's certainly standard of care to do that, and in my practice, I do that, but there might be a time where, you know, we as a community can settle on a little bit less frequent blood draws for this medicine.
Absolutely, and it's one of those things where we can't really use our judgment all the time. We're sort of required to do things a certain way, and it's unfortunate that we can't practice in the way we think would be best for our patients. But because of the potential risks of birth defects of women in childbearing years, it's just required to go through that proper protocol. But I would ask your doctor about Aldactone to see if that might be helpful for you. I usually use it in a low dose of 25 to 50 milligrams and find it to be very well tolerated. So that might really, I've had patients who've come in, they've had 4 courses of Accutane, their acne comes back when they stop. I put them on this medicine, give it 3-4 months, and their skin really clears up so nicely, and they don't even really need topicals. So I can't say that that will happen for you, but I've had very good experience and results. And again, it's an off-label use. It's not the primary indication for that medication. It's really used for people who have high blood pressure as a water pill, as a diuretic. But one of the side effects of it is that it blocks the hormone receptors. And even when my patients come in and they say, well, my labs are all normal, it's not a systemic thing necessarily. I think that there might be, within the receptors in the skin, there might be a hypersensitivity to the circulating normal levels of hormones that causes this acne. So I would really consider adding that in along with a topical retinoid like Retin-A or Tazorac, and a topical wash maybe with a benzoyl peroxide and the clindamycin. So you have different routes to go. If you can't get the low dose Accutane over time, or you don't, there is a maximum lifetime dose of the oral isotretinoin or Accutane, so you can't necessarily just keep taking it forever just because it works, because it can affect your bones and other things as well. So I would ask your doctor about that, see what they have to say.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks for your call. Amy, we don't have that much time left, but I want to get your sense of what you think are the greatest, newest devices. You talked a little bit about Zeltiq, and it sounds like you're very excited about that. And I think that also leads to off-face treatments. Are there other things you're doing off-face that you're very excited about?
Well, I think that there's been a resurgence of interest with hand rejuvenation, for example, which is not necessarily new, but the hands of patients who have facial work done sometimes will be revealing that they are older than they appear on their face. And so there's been volumization techniques like Radiesse or doing brown spot removal, and we've really had a lot of success with that type of treatments. And I think that one thing that I thought is not really something I do in my office, but it's a question that patients have of mine is regarding the UV nail polish, which
is... Oh, yes, that's true. I wanted to bring that up. I'm so glad you did.
See, I like to have my nails done, but I don't like it when my nails chip after 3 days.
Yeah.
And it's very annoying to me.
Yeah.
And so I was doing the UV nail polish for a year or so, but I was concerned that, the UV light that you put your hands in is maybe a problem. And there was a recent study that showed that there was, or at least a case report showed that there was some person who had an extended history of UV skin, UV nail polish gel, and she had developed skin cancers on her fingers. And so I think that this is an interesting topic, because when I had suggested to my manicurist that I put sunscreen on my hands during this procedure, she thought it would mess up with the nail polish. And so I think that, going forward, if you are listening and getting those types of treatments, I would probably consider at least putting some sort of glove with the fingers cut out to protect your hand from that light.
I think that's a great idea. Actually, I never sit there long enough. I always run out and hope that I don't mess up my nail polish, because I just don't have that extra 5 minutes. I have no patience for it. So who knew?
These are the ones that are actually set with the UV light, though. I mean, there's the ones where you put your hand in the UV.
Oh, I see. Yes, these are actually set with the
UV light.
No, then you have to wear the gloves. I love that idea.
And so it's just one of those things that patients this time of year will ask about nails. And I think that, long nails are more brittle than short nails. If you're going to trim your nail, make sure you soak it first. If it's dry, it's easier to crack it. You don't want to make your nails too curvy, because it can grow into the side of the skin. It can become ingrown. I think that the nails in general are this topic is not super popular, but yet everyone, I think, is somewhat interested because they want to have nice nails.
Yep. And Amy, you know what? That reminds me that is a whole topic to have you back for. That was on my list of things to talk about, but we came so far. But I want to give out your website one more time before we run. It's Derek Dermatology.
DerekDermatology.com. And thank
Perfect.
You again for having me. It reminds
Great.
Me what a wonderful job we have, don't you think? I think of that
every
day.
Oh, we're the luckiest. We are so blessed and privileged.
How interesting is all these calls and questions?
I love
super
it.
Super interesting.
And I'm so glad you were here. This was really fun, and I hope you come back and say hi to your mom for me, too.
I'll say hi to my mom and all of her friends, such as Nancy, who is also listening today.
That's great. And a very, very happy holiday.
Happy holidays to you and everyone else out there.
Great. Thanks. So thanks for listening this evening. This is the Dermatology Show, and I'm Dr. Doris Day.